to the Gridiron Show, as brought to you by Sports Travel Tours. Week 5 is in the book, and let's be honest, it's been the best week of football we've seen so far this season. And not only that, but at this point in the year, we have the most ever undefeated teams at this point in an NFL season. The Bengals, the Panthers, the Packers, the Patriots, the Falcons, and the Broncos, all undefeated up to this point. But which of them falls first? We'll talk about that on this edition of the Gridiron Show! Nearly forgot about the Broncos then. Not going to lie.
You couldn't tell.
Really good.
No, right.
Maybe
tell.
I'll cut that bit out then. This is the Gridiron Show, brought to you in association with Sports Travel Tours. That's Sports Tours by sports fans for sports fans. Ollie Hunter joins me, Will Gavin, in the studio. How are you doing this very early morning, Ollie Hunter?
Hey, very early morning. I'm doing great. That's because I've seen that UK Packers have made their way to Heathrow with Sports Travel Tours. They're off. They're off to Lambeau.
How exciting.
Oh, man, I'm so jealous. They'll be there the whole week. I think they're taking on a high school game. They're going to be doing a Wisconsin Badger game. And then they're going to finish off with the Chargers game on Sunday, the 18th of October. Oh, my God, I'm so jealous. So jealous!
That should be a half-decent game, Badgers, Purdue Boilermakers. Not a terrible game. Not a great game, but not a terrible game. And yeah, the Packers game next weekend is going to be brilliant. So that's going to be phenomenal. We'll try and be keeping in touch with them and hopefully speak to them early next week. If not in the later game, they're going to tell us a bit about their experiences. Mm-hmm. So loads to get from that. And it was an amazing week 5 of football. What we're going to be talking about on today's show is we're going to be looking at all these 4-0, 5-0 teams and saying which team is going to be going the longest with an unbeaten record and which team is going to fall. We've asked you that on Twitter, on Facebook, and just in all forms of social media we could find. That's not true. We did not Snapchat it. So we're going to bring your answers on it. We're going to give our answers on it.
Don't know what Snapchat is.
Yeah, it's terrible. Don't worry about it.
Why do people go on about it?
It's mainly teenagers sending pictures of their genitals to each other, from what I understand.
Of their genitals?
Of their genitals. It's like 6 in the morning.
Okay,
let me be.
Okay.
Right, so we've got loads of stuff to cram into the show. It is a really exciting one this week. Keep checking us out, as always, on Twitter at Gridiron and gridiron-magazine.com. Go there, do the predictor game, read the fantastic articles on there. There's loads of great stuff on the website. That's gridiron-magazine.com. And I figured we should give people a little bit of an update on the league table so far.
We don't have to.
Post-week, yes, we definitely do. Look, the people need the information. How did you do this week on picks, Ollie?
I think I got about 4.
And is that the second time this season you've had that kind of performance?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I had one really good week, about 12 I think I got, and I've just been bang average.
Amazing. So the currently leading is Cowboys. That's all they're called. We'd love to find out who that is. So if you're listening to the show, please do let us know. And the leaders on week 5 with 12 picks out of 14. Phil Sargent, Teabag 01. He's going to be teabagging Ollie as his prize. And Follows 9988. Have all got 12 points, so fantastic. Well done to those guys.
Those guys, there's a real difference in quality of name.
It really slips down as it goes, doesn't it?
So Phil Sargent, right, yeah, that's your name. Fair play to you. Teabag01, I quite like that. I think that's quite funny. But Follows 9988.
Maybe that's how many followers he's got.
Well, that would be changing all the time.
Well, maybe he's changing his username all the time. I don't know.
Can you do that?
Yeah, no idea whatsoever. But the overall leaderboard is what you're most bothered about. Cowboys currently leads it with 53 picks correct through the season. I'd love to tell you how many games that's from, but I didn't do the maths before the show. Sorry. But let's look at the Gridiron League. I am on 46 picks. That's 7 off the pace. Not brilliant, but it's definitely salvageable. Matthew Sherry is one ahead of me on 47. Liam Blackburn leads the Gridiron team on 51 picks. Unfortunately, Simon Clancy keeps sending us his picks in a Facebook group, but forgetting to put them on gridiron-magazine.com. So we haven't decided whether we're going to allow them yet or not. Plus, no one's quite collated them. And Ollie, where are you?
43 picks. I'm only 3 behind you.
Bang! Last!
3 behind you. It is salvageable.
Yeah, it definitely is salvageable over me, but I'm not sure you're going to be catching Liam Blackburn a full 8 ahead of you. You're going to have to be averaging a pick better than him a week to be beating him this year.
Doable.
And,
doable.
Yeah, maybe. We'll have to see. So, yeah, keep checking that out, gridiron-magazine.com. Ollie, other than football, did you have an exciting weekend? Did you do anything you want to tell us about? Is there anything burning on the Ollie Hunter tongue that just needs to get out there into the world?
I watched the new Walking Dead last night.
Yes, loved it.
Great, wasn't it? I loved the black and white for the flashback and then back into colour for now.
Are you also a man that watches The Talking Dead?
Oh, recorded it. The football started, so I couldn't watch it.
Now, we can't. We obviously don't want to give too many spoilers away because there'll be people who maybe download the podcast this morning but have DVR'd or TiVo'd the Walking Dead last night. But I love. I think they do season openers. What's the word I'm looking for? Debuts, season premieres better than anyone else. And not only was it a great all-round episode, full of drama, full of excitement, but also it ended on a great cliffhanger, which set up this season beautifully. So well done, The Walking Dead.
Oh, because amazing cliffhanger.
They had such a horrible lull in around the middle seasons. In around season 3, season 4, it got very slow-paced, a bit boring. It's really got good again now. And I love The Walking Dead.
And layers.
So many layers.
So many layers.
Are you a reader of the comics?
No.
I've read some of the comics, and they veer off quite a bit from the comics from up to where I've read, but they're still very good and worth a read. I'd rather read the Walking Dead comics than read the Game of Thrones books. That's my feeling.
How do you feel about books? I'm going to ignore that. How do you feel about books and comics?
Because you've wasted your time reading the Game of Thrones.
I have not
books.
Wasted.
He's never going to release another one. It's never going to happen.
How do you feel about the books and comic adaptations into movies, and when they deviate, does that annoy you, or are you happy with it as long as it's okay and it's good?
Yeah, as long as it makes sense in the medium that it's being translated into. I think all of the Game of Thrones changes have made absolute sense, bar one, which is that they didn't bring in a certain character who I hope they bring into the next series. So again, I don't want to spoil it for people. But just
say the character off air. It's an absolute disgrace that they haven't done that.
Yeah, you started to react to that with the mic still down was terrible. But
no.
something else to tell you.
Yeah, I read that.
Did you read that? I posted it on Facebook today. Isn't it incredible?
I read it, and you can check back my tweets because Simon Clancy favourited it. I said, I think I read it on Saturday, and if it's the one thing that you read today, and that can be for any day,
other than stuff on gridiron-magazine.com,
read this, and it actually made me weep.
It's the story of the third man in the very famous photo from the 1968 Summer Olympics. You'll be very familiar with the photo. It's the one with where Carlos and Smith have got their fist up in the air. They're doing the Black Power. They've got no shoes on to represent the poverty that's been forced on people of colour, is what they said at that point. But what I never noticed before is they're both wearing the pin badge, the patch for the Olympic Project for Human Rights. And if you look at the Australian sprinter who stood next to them, he is also wearing that patch, and I've never, ever noticed that before. And what this is, that's the Australian sprinter, a man by the name of Peter Norman, Australian who, for the 200-metre finals, he looked like going into the final like he could cause an absolute upset, ended up coming second, getting that silver medal, and being a big hero for many people at home. But then when he stood in solidarity with these guys, they suddenly just ostracized him from Australia at that time still had apartheid. They ostracized him from Australian athletics. He couldn't get a job, and he just completely, continuously refused to denounce the actions of his two fellow athletes. And I don't want to spoil the article. Read it, because it has a beautiful ending and it's a wonderfully written piece. I've tweeted it out. It's also on my Facebook, if your friends would be on there. So it's definitely well worth a read. We've got 10 minutes into this podcast, Ollie, nearly, without talking about a jot of football on the most exciting football week of the year. What are we doing?
Back to the normal form. I'd say form, it's either good or bad that has got us here to this point.
It has to be said that part of the reason for this is we did have an interview with Bengals legendary lineman Dave Lapham lined up for today, but unfortunately he's had to pull out various different factors. We will get him on at another time. I want to get him on while the Bengals are still undefeated, and we'll talk about that game shortly. And we're going to get to those undefeated games, but let's start off with it. It is Tuesday morning as we're recording this, the Monday night football game, and what a thriller it ended up being. Le'Veon Bell scored on a one-yard wildcat run as time expired to give Mike Vick and the Pittsburgh Steelers a stunning 20. 24-20 victory over the San Diego Chargers tonight. With 5 seconds left, Bell took a direct snap, ran left, was buried in traffic, but somehow bounced off and dived into the end zone, getting the ball across the line as Donald Butler dragged him down. Thousands of Pittsburgh fans, it was amazing how many away fans they took, were waving their terrible towels inside the Qualcomm. They improved to 3-2. San Diego dropped to 2-3. Vic was having an absolutely awful game until the fourth quarter. Then Philip Rivers drove the Chargers down the field with a beautiful drive. Antonio Gates, we'll get onto him in a moment, but he drove the team down the field, put them a touchdown up. Vic got the ball back. There were about 4 minutes left, just around that 4 or 5 minutes left. He threw a touchdown bomb down the field. I'm trying to remember what the length on it was, because we've literally just come 72 yards to Marcus Wheaton, which after the game, he not only talked about making that play, but he admitted that Big Ben, coaching on the sidelines, drew up that play. He'd looked at the weaknesses of the defense and he said, Marcus, make this route, throw the ball into that area, and you've got a guaranteed long gain, if not a touchdown. They scored the touchdown. Philip Rivers then drives them back down the field again. They get the field goal, 54-yarder, nailed it. You think it's got to be all over with the way Vic's playing. He gets a 25-yard run to put them into position. And then they get the ball down to the one. Heath Miller catches it on the one. It looks like he might have scored a touchdown. They actually end up getting a penalty and putting it down to the 1 yard line from the 2 yard line. And the penalty, which is a hit on a defenseless receiver, probably stopped the initial touchdown, to be honest, for the Chargers. And you've got to think, right, you've got 5 seconds. You've got a timeout left. You've got to sneak that. Because if you sneak it, or if you go for a direct run up the middle, even if you don't get it in, if you go for a leap, whatever you do, it'll only run 2 or 3 seconds off the clock. You can call a timeout, take the field goal, go to overtime. Instead, they direct snap it to a guy who's known for his patience and his wiliness. And they were literally inches away from losing this game on that decision. The Steelers have come away with a win here, but genuinely, they're a team who, in the last 2 weeks, have got two very lucky wins. Well, no, in the last 2 weeks, have come away with a very unlucky victory thanks to some terrible play calling, and now a very lucky win despite some terrible play calling. Their two fourth down calls last week did kill the game for them, and this really could have killed the game for them. So, Steelers fans, you're very lucky, but you're 3-2, and you've got to be feeling pretty good in that AFC North now.
Unless it's Big Ben on drawn up.
I mean, I say pretty good. You've still not going to beat the Bengals. But yeah. There we go.
Unless it's Big Ben drawing up massive plays throughout the game. Who's calling their offensive plays? Is it Mike Tomlin?
Well, I guess it's Todd Haley. It should be Todd Haley as the offensive coordinator. And he's, generally not been a terrible play caller, but he has made some awful decisions in the last 2 weeks, which genuinely could have cost this team. But the Steelers moved to 3-2. Good for you, guys. I'm really kind of pleased for you. Not that.
Are the Steelers, I don't remember really seeing Wildcat in the 3 or 4 years that I've been really watching the NFL properly. I haven't seen that kind of formation before. Direct snapping to a running back. It's kind of unusual, isn't it?
It is unusual. Wildcat is something which went out with Tim Tebow's second year in the league where he was in vogue. After that, we've not really seen any Wildcat run at all. It's one of those things that defenses seem to figure out. But certainly, it was a bizarre decision. Let's move on and talk about the undefeated teams, because we've got loads of responses to this.
Antonio Gates.
Oh, I didn't talk about Antonio Gates. What am I doing? Unbelievable. Antonio Gates became only the second tight end in NFL history to catch 100 touchdowns. Do you know who the first one was?
Is it the fella who was at the Atlanta, Gonzalez?
Tony Gonzalez, well done, sir. Good man. Tony Gonzalez was the first man to score 100 touchdowns. Antonio Gates, 101 touchdowns after his second touchdown last night. He had 93 yards off 9 catches on the night, 2 touchdowns, and not only that, but on the first drive, 3 catches, 35 yards, and a touchdown. He is Phil Rivers' safety blanket. They lost this game in a game they probably shouldn't have lost thanks to some bad defensive plays at the end. But Antonio Gates being back for them is a huge boon. Having him back was an absolutely huge boon for them. And amazingly, him and Philip Rivers have now connected for 74 touchdowns, which brings them up to within two of being the fourth most prolific partnership in NFL history. Two more and they'll go level with Peyton Manning and Reggie Wayne. Ahead of them, Dan Marino and Mark Clayton, one of the Marx brothers. Steve Young and Jerry Rice on 92 ahead of them, and I don't think anyone's catching Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison's ludicrous 114 touchdowns through until 2008.
Mad. No, they won't do that.
But 74 touchdowns between two guys. You can imagine them getting a bunch more this season to overtake that record. Antonio Gates. Well done, sirs. Well done. Now can we move on and talk about the other games?
Yes, yes, we can.
So there are six undefeated teams in the league, and I think we should start off by talking about my favourite game of the weekend. The Cincinnati Bengals against the Seattle Seahawks. Andy Dalton, the Red Rifle, led the Bengals from a 17-point fourth-quarter deficit to a 27-24 overtime victory, keeping Cincinnati undefeated with the second-biggest comeback in its history and the first time in history that they have gone 5-0 as a franchise. They've been to two Super Bowls. They lost to the 49ers in both of them. That's just a side note. But they have gone 5-0 for the first time in history, and I am loving this Bengals team.
Isn't it great it was against Pete Carroll as well?
Yeah, always great. I mean, they were trailing 24-7 in the fourth quarter. Dalton threw for a touchdown, ran for another. They had the 69-yard drive without a timeout. Mike Nugent tied it with the 31-yard field goal. They had no timeouts left. 7 seconds left. They had to run the field goal unit on, snap the ball, take the kick, and they managed to absolutely nail it. And he was good again from 42 yards with 3:36 left in overtime. The Bengals 5-0. Seattle have fallen to 2-3, punted twice in overtime. And I am really genuinely, before we get on to the Bengals' chances this year, genuinely concerned about that Seattle offense.
Yeah, they're not managing to find Jimmy Graham. That was the whole reason that he was brought, which would be this big red zone target, this target across the field that they're not finding whatsoever. Their wide receiving core is not being found by Russell Wilson. I mentioned it last week, and I was worried that it would all catch up with Russell Wilson, with all of their passing plays being pretty much improvised, and hoping and praying that what Russell Wilson can do with his feet and creating spaces, it did come back to haunt them, and it has come back to haunt them.
Well, it was, interestingly, as it was first half, they were fine and actually looked pretty good. Second half, they went completely missing. Only three first downs in their final six drives, including the two chances in overtime. Wilson actually has to take some of the blame on this occasion. Yes, the offensive line play is absolutely terrible, but he's not looked great. And then the defense. This defense, who we want to give so much love to, particularly since Cam Chancellor's been back, they are just collapsing in fourth quarters. Ever since Brady broke them in Super Bowl 49, that's just looking at their overall completion stats. Fourth quarter passing defense for the last six games, and Greg Bedard put this out. So this includes Super Bowl 49, right? 2012 to 2014, when they were the dominant defense in the NFL, and they were truly dominant. They were the best scoring defense. They had the least yardage. They were just the most takeaways. They were phenomenal. In 48 games in the fourth quarter, they gave up 60% completion, 14 touchdowns to 22 interceptions, and a passer rating of 69.3. Pretty damn good. Through the Super Bowl to Week 5 this season in six games, they've given up an 86% completion rating, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions, and a rating of 135.5. They have been collapsing in fourth quarters, left, right, and centre, against pretty average teams some of the time, pretty good teams sometimes, but really, this Seahawks defence need to sort themselves out and be able to finish games. I think Cam Chancellor has really brought in that unit a huge amount of quality that they were missing, and a huge amount of organisation they were missing, but I'm concerned for the Seahawks.
And one of those stats that you haven't read out is the sacks. 35 in the 12-14 season. Just 4 so far through week 5. That's crazy. So they're not even getting any pressure on the quarterback. We saw that in the game against Green Bay, and we saw that yesterday as well. That's why Dalton has managed to pull off what he has managed to pull off. Now, if I said to you, and to you listeners out there, if I said to you there was a receiver or someone that caught the ball on this Cincinnati Bengals, 8 receptions, 90 yards, 2 touchdowns, you would say,
Tyler Eifert.
AJ Green. But no, you're right. It was Tyler Eifert. He looks an absolute beast.
Yeah, well, so let's talk about this. Now, I think the Bengals, of the teams that we're talking about with undefeated teams, have one of the toughest record, one of the toughest schedules. And actually, people who have got in touch with us to let us know who they think will go longest and shortest. Interestingly, nobody has taken the Bengals to go shortest except for Liam Blackburn, who thinks they're going to lose in Buffalo next weekend. He thinks Rex will get him up
yeah,
for
but
it.
Liam's
they're
going
to have Watkins, they're going to have Carlos Williams back. He is a big time Rex sympathizer. But nobody has gone for the Bengals holding the record for the longest time from all the responses we've had. And I love this team. I think they're going to win the AFC North hands down now, but they've got to go to the Bills, to the Steelers.
That's where
in division. Home to the Browns, and the Browns have looked frisky this week, and admittedly that's not the toughest of games. And then to the Texans, home to the Texans, but then at the Cardinals, home to the Rams, at the Browns, Steelers, and then they finish at the Broncos and home to the Ravens.
Sorry,
in
you
division.
Missed someone out there.
Yeah, I do. At the 49ers in week 15.
I think they'll be fine for that one.
Don't get me wrong, I think they're going to go like 14-2, 13-3, but I don't see them being either the team that give it up quickest or the team that lose it the quickest. So they are off our conversation point. We mentioned the Seahawks there. A lot of people who have picked a team to go to be the quickest to lose their record. And in fact, I'd say the majority of you that have done that is the Carolina Panthers. Now, I mentioned this because the Panthers, of course, on a bye week this week. But just to go through the answers on this, we've got from... Richard Graves said since he stayed undefeated the longest. I do apologise. There was somebody else who went with that. He says Carolina loses next week in Seattle. Pat's UK says got to be the Panthers, right? Danny King says Panthers in Seattle next week. Scott Campbell, Panthers at Seattle next week. Panthers are good, but not that good. Streak ends. So everyone thinks the Panthers are going to give it up in Seattle next week. It's going to be down to whether that defense goes, well, this is one of the most weaponless offenses we've seen. Oh, Sherry went for the same. Clancy went for the same. Everyone's picking the Panthers to lose that game. Interesting. We'll get onto our picks a little bit later on.
Well, I'm just saying, yeah, I'm not.
Who do you want to go for next of the undefeated teams?
Let's go for the Atlanta Falcons.
The Atlanta Falcons.
Because I think that they... Okay, they scraped past Washington. They were not good against Washington. It was 25-19 at the Georgia Dome.
In overtime as well. Yeah. And they had to rely on a defensive touchdown to win it.
Exactly. But Devonta Freeman, again, looks an absolute beast and ran over a Washington's rush defense, which is actually pretty sneaky good. But Washington couldn't really get much going. Kirk Cousins, for a while, looked a little bit better than Matt Ryan.
Yeah, and actually Matt Ryan, who I have a lot of love for, had a bad game against Washington, and that's one of the reasons why they struggled in this one. He had two interceptions, lost a fumble, but they overcame that. Freeman, you mentioned, 27 carries, 153 yards for the touchdown. He's been an absolute monster. I'm going to talk about his catch a little bit later. I want to discuss that in a while when we talk about the catch rule. But he still managed to force in a 6-yard run after not being given the 13-yard reception. I think the Falcons overall look like a balanced team. They can run the ball. Their defense under Dan Quinn's been frisky. I think they are an exciting team, and most importantly, they have a ludicrously easy schedule coming up in theory.
In theory, and that's where the theory comes in, because their next game is the Thursday night game against the Saints at the Saints.
And Thomas Willoughby got in touch on Twitter to say probably the Falcons losing it on Thursday, knowing our luck. He's obviously a Falcons fan, and that does feel like one of those ones where it kind of could come down to. I'm just thinking about it. Yeah, that could be the one it comes down to for the Falcons. But then beyond that, so at the Saints Thursday night football. Short week, on the road, divisional, that's tough.
Julio is not his usual self. So there are a few things. You coughed in my direction again.
Sorry, carry on.
Julio is not himself. So short week, Matt Ryan wasn't great. Devonta Freeman took a lot of, was on the field a lot. I know he's a young guy, but it's a short turnaround. And I just think the Saints could do something under the lights you know, it's always under the lights.
But then they're that's true. Then they're at the Titans, home to the Bucks, at the 49ers, home to the Colts could be tough if the Colts get themselves together. Home to the Vikings, similarly. Then at the Buccaneers, at the Panthers is the first game they've got against a team with a winning record right now.
Yeah, and that's where. You know,
and just to confirm, that's in week 14
yes.
is the first time they play. They've only got two games against a team with a winning record left this season, as it currently stands, and that's their two divisional games with the Panthers.
Yeah, okay, so their schedule should be called the Schedule Disgrace.
Brilliant. So we'd like them to continue their undefeated run a little bit longer. What about the New England Patriots? Is there anything else you want to say about the Falcons game? I think from a Washington perspective, Kirk Cousins had a better game than he had the week previously, but he made some big mistakes here through the game-winning interception, which killed it off. All in all, I still think in a tough NFC East, a NFC East that's going to be won by a team at 9-7, they're not the team that's going to finish with that record.
Yeah, agreed.
But their run defense continues to be good, apart from against Devonta Freeman. I've got to throw in some kind of positive. I can't just bag on them entirely. Tom Brady threw for two touchdowns with a one-yard plunge for another score as the New England Patriots pulled away from a powerless Dallas offense without Tony Romo and Dez Bryant for a 30-6 victory over the Cowboys on Sunday. But that doesn't tell the story. Brady guided two long touchdown drives in the second half after getting sacked five times before halftime, including once by Greg Hardy and Rolando McClain, both returning from their four-game suspension. The 30-year-old Brady joined Peyton Manning and Fran Tarkenton as the only NFL quarterbacks to get up to 4-0 starts at least four times, and they won their seventh straight game. They were really, the offensive line really struggled against the Cowboys in the first half. Their defense played really, really well. And it was only thanks to the Brandon Whedon mess on the other side of the ball that really the Pats hung in this game in the first half and then pulled away in the second half. I still think, like, just to go through the people picking the Patriots, obviously, obviously Sherry's saying, I can't see where the Patriots lose. Simon's saying Patriots will go undefeated before losing in the Super Bowl. Liam has got Patriots losing in the same week I've got them losing, so we'll get into that in a moment. All in all, people really fancying the Patriots to be the team to go the longest. But I look at their Week 10 game with the Giants, and I think on the road, that could be a loss for them. Then on the road at the Broncos, because the Giants, that's going to be the first time that they're going to come up against a good passing attack. Then on the road at the Broncos 2 weeks later, if they do manage to beat the Giants, that's coming up against the best defense in the league. I think there's a couple of losses in this Pats team this year. I still think they're the best team in the AFC. Don't get me wrong. I think they go maybe 14-2.
Yeah. I mean, the Pats were the ones that I was thinking would go the longest. I think they'll come up, they'll get past the Giants, but that Broncos game, Sunday night game, I think that's a cracker of a game. However, if they get through that, they've got to host the Eagles. We'll get onto the Eagles in a bit, but the Eagles offense seems like it's starting to churn a little bit.
I'm not going to get too excited about that yet.
But then the final two games, and they always struggle against they don't struggle, but you know, going away, their final two games are at the Jets and at the Dolphins, and I can't see them winning both of those. So I don't see them being undefeated by the end of the season. I just can't see it. But
Paul McNeil said the same thing. He said the Pats will go longest, look unstoppable. Only one really tough game at Denver. I back that Giants game yet again. And they've got a terrible record against the Giants, as Liam pointed out, Liam Blackburn pointed out on Facebook. They've obviously, including the two Super Bowl losses, they've lost against them on a number of occasions recently. They lost in the regular season. I think it's three straight, including those two Super Bowl losses as well. I think the Giants might have their number.
And that could be in Brady and Belichick's heads, those two Super Bowl defeats. I mean,
they're probably going to go undefeated and be ridiculous, but yeah, we're all hoping.
Let's hope for all our sakes, especially our professional sakes, with Matt Sherry around, that they don't go undefeated, because no one wants that. Dion Lewis, he looks amazing, doesn't he?
Ridiculous how that guy was on the Eagles squad and cut. By the way, Ryan Grigson at the Colts, who is a guy we bag on a regular basis, picked up Dion Lewis, cut him 3 days later. He's picked up by the Patriots. You're an idiot, Ryan Grigson. You're a total idiot. You don't deserve to have your job. I've been told ranting is should be my new thing. We've had a lot of love for the rants this week. Floss got in touch on Twitter, who's our South African fan.
Oh, said, hello, mate.
Said, I don't know what that was.
You're right, Dave.
That's more Rhodesian.
Yes,
Diamond.
You are quite right.
loved your rant about Greg Hardy on the pod. Misogynistic bellend laughed out loud at work this. Tim Brown and Rich Wyatt both got in touch about my Clay Matthews rant. So apparently what I should now be doing is getting much, much angrier on the podcast.
Yeah, I agree with that. So, Ryan Grigson, didn't you say to on some Facebook chat that we have internally at Gridiron, didn't you say he's only done two good things?
Ryan Grigson is basically, you know, he's done one really great thing.
Which was?
Which was handling that team the year that Chuck Pagano went out with cancer, left the team. Arians came in, did a phenomenal job of picking up that team in a terrible situation, taking a rookie quarterback to the playoffs. They were brilliant that year, and he had a lot to do with that in his first ever season as a GM. I totally get that. I think it was brilliant. He selected T.Y. Hilton. Well done. He traded for Vontae Davis. Well done.
I love Vontae Davis.
He also traded a first round pick for Trent Richardson, who isn't an NFL running back. He also picked a slew of attacking options this year and didn't shore up the offensive line, causing Andrew Luck to have all the issues he's had this year. Ryan Grigson is terrible at his job!
I agree.
We need some kind of terrible at your job stab.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's going to be. Maybe it's this.
Mike Pettine sucks.
Ryan Grigson.
It sucks.
Ryan Grigson.
It sucks.
Ryan Grigson.
It sucks.
Because I haven't got a drop for it, but...
we'll find one. But by the way, if you find or if you hear something, if out there, if you hear something or you think it could be funny or used on the show, at Gridironus on Twitter, please.
Is that what we've reduced ourselves to?
Yes,
now?
It has.
final thing about this game, just before we get off it. Cowboys, somebody tweeted me last week who was obviously listening to back episodes of the podcast and said, sorry, I've not got the tweet up in front of me. Tell me who you are and I'll say your name again next week, saying that he thinks that the Cowboys would be the team. Remember we talked about if all 32 starting quarterbacks went down. I think the Cowboys have proven without a starting quarterback, they're not going to be the sort of team who go on to win the Super Bowl. And that offensive line is still good, but compared to last year when it had one of the best performances of a young group of players I've ever seen, it's not up to that level. It hasn't been protecting the quarterback in the same way. It hasn't been making the holes for the run in the same way. And the Patriots, particularly Jabal Sheard, who was a big, big time pickup from the Browns this offseason, he's been absolutely fantastic and was particularly fantastic on Sunday night. They really let them go to town on Whedon, and it wasn't a good performance from that group.
No, by the way, have you got an apology for me?
No, I don't. That's a conversation for another time, because that's a different rant for a different occasion.
Okay. Well, I'm just I'm still waiting for it. I expect it in San Francisco when he wins the Super Bowl for the Patriots.
Incredibleman! And I will scream that down a microphone if he does it, okay? Aaron Rodgers is a human being! Hysterical! He is no longer the quarterbacking robot as he threw not just two touchdowns and 241 yards, but two interceptions and fumbled the ball for a third turnover.
Look, I don't want to be, you know, an apologist for Aaron Rodgers, but I will be. Because one of the interceptions was a pick and an incredible dive by Laurinaitis. The second one shouldn't even be an interception. Because it bounced on the floor. Yeah. The ball bounced on the floor. It doesn't make sense. And then the fumble wasn't his fault. It was from a slap from behind. The offensive line crumbled, and it was recovered by St. Louis. So in all three of those turnovers were not Aaron Rodgers' fault. The catch rule that currently presides in the NFL sucks. like Mike Pearson.
I was slightly gutted that he didn't get to the 50 touchdown passes, just because I like a good rounded off stat. But 587 pass attempts, 587 yeah pass attempts, 49 touchdown passes at home ended Laurinaitis' diving pick of that tipped ball, and admittedly of his interceptions in the last 2 years, five of now seven. It was five of six have been from tipped passes. So he's still incredible. He still had a decent game. I think he's missing Jordy Nelson more than we like to admit. Yeah. They won this game 24-10 over the Rams. There was some bizarre plays in general in this game. First of all, let's get the Rams out of the way here. Lots of love for Todd Gurley. Unbelievable.
So good.
Brilliant in the open field. A good old school power back coming, going through the middle. His first cut is great. He looks a genuine superstar. Absolutely awesome to behold. And also, he put one of the best blocks I think I've ever seen when Clay Matthews basically tried to vaunt over him to get to the quarterback, and he just shoved him up in the air and then let him drop to the ground. It was almost like a wrestling move. It was brilliant.
I thought you'd like that, especially given it was on Clay.
Let's watch it again, because quite a few people tweeted it at me, I think you'll find. that was particularly fantastic from him, but he was brilliant. Other than that, okay, Gurley's tackle breaking, Tavon Austin's gimmick plays, great, but Nick Foles just isn't good enough. But I just a bit of love, even though it contains Clay Matthews, a bit of love for this Packers defense. Because people aren't talking about it. And I'm somebody who in the past has slagged them off. They've been brilliant against the run. I know they gave up a lot of yards to Todd Gurley. We've just said he looks like a superstar. BJ Raji has looked fantastic this year. Clay Matthews moved to the center, looks much, much better. Sam Shields, who I thought was the most overpaid corner, maybe in the history of the NFL, has looked really, really good the last 3 weeks.
Beep, beep, beep. That's Will Gavin backing up.
I think the Packers are the team that are going to go the longest undefeated, because basically they have a whole package. Stop hugging me. Get off me. I think they've got some pretty tough games coming up. They've got to go to the Broncos and to the Panthers on week eight, off the back of their bye in week eight and then week nine. Those are two really, really tough games. But actually, I think this team has enough to go and win both of those games. I think that they are the most complete team in the NFL. I think between them, the Cardinals, who we won't be talking about in too much depth because they're not undefeated, but they look like a whole team, and the Patriots still have holes in their secondary, but they look like a great team. They're the teams who are impressing me on both sides of the ball at the moment, and I've not said that much about the Packers in recent season.
Are you going?
Let's go Crackers with the Packers!
I don't want to because you're here, but I am loving on
them. I knew it! You're a closet Packers fan! You're the glory hunter! Oh, you actually are!
Whoa, Ollie Glory Hunter, you back the F up, my young friend.
You're right, the Packers have looked outstanding.
He's not young, he's so old.
Shut your face. The Packers have looked outstanding. That secondary, Rollins got the interception and the pick six from Nick Foles. Demaryius Randall has looked really good this year. Ha-ha Clinton Dix, okay, he had a bad drive where he missed Gurley on the one-yard line, and also gave up a penalty that got them to the one-yard line. But other than that, he's had a brilliant year. He's been great stopping the run, stuffing the box. I've absolutely loved Clay Matthews. I've loved that defensive line. I think the Packers...
So Mike White also agrees and says the Packers will last stand defeated. He sees week 16 going to the desert against the Cardinals, which means he thinks that they'll win those games against the Broncos and Panthers as well. And interestingly, the Broncos are the team that a few people fancy to be the team who are going to lose that record first. People see them winning at the Browns next week. If the Panthers can beat the Seahawks in Seattle next week, they've got to face the Packers at home after both of them have a bye week. So the Broncos and Packers come into that game both off the back of bye weeks in week 8 to face off in the late night Sunday game. Wow, that is a game of football. And let's not forget, it's going to come straight off the back of us having the Chiefs and the Lions in town.
Yeah, I know.
Do you remember how good that game looked 12 months ago?
I know.
How excited we were about it. Well, let's talk about those games later on. But the Denver Broncos, of the teams who are undefeated this weekend, there's no doubt that the one team that we're looking at more than anyone else as being terrible were the Denver Broncos. Chris Harris Jr. returned a fourth quarter interception, 74 yards for a touchdown, as the Broncos overcame an overall shaky day from Peyton Manning to beat the Oakland Raiders just 16-10. Manning was intercepted twice by 1998 draft classmate Charles Woodson, who had never picked him off before this weekend. Spoke about how he'd love to pick him off once before their careers end. Well, he did it twice.
Do you think he's got both balls?
I really hope he does, yeah. I nearly went down a horrible both balls joke there. I'm going to hold off and bite my tongue. But he failed to take them to an offensive touchdown for the second time in five games this season. But that Denver's defense is just ludicrous. And even though they lost DeMarcus Ware, it's looking like he's going to be out for 2 weeks. And even though Von Miller briefly went out of the game, the replacements who came in and did a great job. They forced turnovers. They are just ridiculous. They're such a good defense that they can keep them going. But I also fancy, I like this. I think the Broncos will be the first team to be defeated in that game with the Packers. That means we'll have loads of teams on like 7-0. That's mental. 6-0, 7-0. That's absolutely crazy.
It's amazing, and I love it. The Broncos have won four of their five games by a touchdown or less. So by 7 points or less. And the game that they did win by 12 points was against the Lions. They haven't played anyone with a winning record yet, and they're scraping past. However, it's that old soccer football adage that you're a great team's win when they're playing badly. I don't think that applies here.
No, I think you're right. The other thing to mention, we did briefly mention the fact that the two came in the same draft class. Charles Woodson also, of course, beat Peyton Manning out to the 97 Heisman. He was one of the only defensive players to have won it in the last 50 years or whatever it is. He beat Peyton Manning out. He also beat out Randy Moss in that same group. So what a group of players coming into that 98 draft. What unbelievable collection of players, in fact. There are too many issues for the Broncos at the moment. I believe that Peyton Manning can run the offense the way he wants to run it. I believe the offensive line can sort their issues out. I even believe they can get their run game going. I believe this Broncos team in the second half of the year will become a better offensive team to match it with their defense. But how much would Peyton Manning have loved to have had that defense 2 years ago when they faced the Seahawks in the Super Bowl? Or the following year, these record-breaking offensive seasons, or basically any year he was in Indianapolis. A defense this good with those Peyton Manning offenses, oh my God, they would have gone on to be a dynasty. Instead, he's just got the one ring, and it's coming too late in his career, and it's a real shame.
And one ring less than his brother.
Ugh, how sad. So we've kind of picked our ones. I think we have gone through. Let's have a look. Oh, we did have. Sorry, I do have to mention one quick thing, and it requires a little blast of this. Let's get hysterical, hysterical. I want to get hysterical. Let's get into hysterias. It was good enough to play the long version because Chris Pinders said on Twitter, Peyton's clearly struggling. Isn't going to be here beyond this season, let's face it. May as well give Brock half a season to show what he can do. They're 5-0! I know Peyton's not playing well, but they're 5-0!
That's top hysteria. That's wonderful hysteria.
But what's crazy about it is that Chris Pinder said this on Twitter, and I reacted in that very way I've just reacted now. And then somebody, one of the press members, asked Gary Kubiak in his press conference yesterday, have you considered benching Peyton for Brock because he's playing so badly? So it's not just coming from our crazy Twitter followers. It's coming from everybody.
By those idiot American journalists.
We've had a few people mention them. Immortant says Broncos are going to be the first to lose it because Manning's playing like crap. Chris Jones also said the Broncos are going to be the first to lose it. I've got the Broncos as the first to lose it, but against the Packers, not against the Browns. And I have got... Oh, no, but do the Packers play the Panthers before they play?
No.
No, okay, fine, perfect. Just wanted to make sure that that was the right way around, because otherwise I'd be looking foolish if two teams played each other before then. No, they play the Panthers afterwards, perfect. And I think the Packers go longest. I think the Falcons will trip over somewhere. The Falcons have got too many issues. The Falcons will trip over somewhere. The Patriots trip over in Week 10 against the Giants, or Week 12 against the Broncos, and the Packers fall over against, well, the Cardinals. I feel, I can't, I just... I can't see anything. Everyone wants to be really excited about this and be like, there's going to be an undefeated team. Look at how well these teams are doing. It says two things to me. It says the NFL has become a lot more average. I think you look outside those top six, seven teams, if I'm including the Cardinals as well, and realistically below that, I mean, the Jets have been on a bye this week. They look good, not great. I'm looking below that and I'm just seeing nothing that inspires me.
A lot of mediocre.
A lot of mediocre teams. I mean, the Seahawks have the quality to elevate themselves into that top group, of course. But
not on offensive line anymore.
Yeah, I really think it's a more mediocre league this year. But I also think that being undefeated, I mean, it happened once with the Dolphins. It came very, very close with the Patriots, who, of course, lost the Super Bowl, having gone 18-0, including the playoff games. It's such a ridiculously difficult thing to do. And we saw so many silly upsets this weekend that none... I will put a bet on it now that none of these teams go regular season undefeated.
That's not hysterical. And I don't think that's a bet I want to take up.
So you mentioned the brother-on-brother action. There's still seven games to get through from this weekend, and we'll rattle through these ones. And we'll start off with the Sunday late game. Larry Donnell's spectacular catch over two 49ers players with 21 seconds left lifted the New York Giants past a frisky San Francisco side on Sunday night, capping Eli Manning's sensationally clutch performance, let's be honest. Manning had a career-high 41 completions, and his perfect throw to Donnell finished off an 82-yard drive with a 12-yard touchdown. He is the winningest quarterback in Giants history.
You went there. You went there with that horrendous word.
The Giants are now 3-2, and I said it when they picked up their first win of the season to go 1-2 that they will win this NFC East, and I absolutely stand by it. Whereas San Francisco at 1-4 have lost four in a row. Few talking points from this game. First of all, I've mentioned that passing offense already for when they come up against the Patriots. That looked great this year. They had players missing at the end. They had Odell Beckham go out. He came in the last drive as a decoy, basically, and drew a big penalty flag. But otherwise, you've got Rashad Jennings, Shane Vereen, sorry, suddenly turned up in the passing game for the first time this year and looked really good. Eli was lucky not to be picked off a couple of times. There was in the fourth quarter in the end zone with the game tied. He should have been picked off and wasn't by corner whose name has completely escaped me despite him playing for my own team, because that's how bad our backfield is. Kenneth Acker, and he also should have been picked off on that final drive as well. He got lucky with two passes. The catch, the Larry Donnell catch. Now, we've mentioned a couple of other catches already, and I'm not saying this isn't a catch. I'm saying this is a catch. I should say that, not double negative. It absolutely is a catch. But when he goes to the ground, he hits the ground, the ball is still moving slightly.
No, I don't believe it.
No. And I'm saying it's a catch. I'm not slagging this off. What I'm saying is, compare it to Devontae Freeman's. Compare it to Tyler Eifert's. Compare it to Dez Bryant's last year. He's made a footballing move. He's brought the ball down. He's kept control despite the fact the ball is moving slightly in his hands. And yet all those other ones are not ruled a catch. They really need to review this catch rule. Devontae Freeman should have had that caught touchdown. Tyler Eifert should have had a touchdown last week. It is getting utterly ridiculous, the catch rule in this league. And the problem is that we have a situation with the officials last week where they didn't know what a rule was when the ball was tipped out the back of the end zone. I feel like they don't understand the catch rule, let alone everyone else. It was Larry Donnell's. I'll keep saying this because people will think I'm ranting about this as a Homer thing. It was absolutely a catch, but so were all those other catches, and they need to sort it out. And why, you pointing out the interception in your game, why is that a catch?
It's not a catch.
But if an offensive player makes the same catch, it's not a catch.
Yeah. Well, no, the one, the Larry Donnell, I think was a catch because I think it wasn't moving. But that's by the by. Whereas
well, all the analysts said it was. But, so.
Well, I didn't have the volume on. I was at work. What can I do?
That's fine.
But the one
everyone agreed.
The Green Bay one where it touched the ground wasn't a catch.
Absolutely ludicrous. Look, we said we were going to rattle through these games. I will make a very small mention of the 49ers in that Colin Kaepernick had a good game. He had two touch passes to Anquan Boldin on the two touchdown drives where he passed him on the outside that were touch passes, not his usual power it 25 yards down the field, overthrow everyone, which were beautiful touch passes. And what happens is when he gets going, Carlos Hyde plays well. There's enough in this team to think that they can get 3, 4, 5 wins. I'm just concerned that there's too much in this team that they might try and stick with Kaepernick beyond this year.
Yeah.
That's all Hain, I want to
say. Hainplane almost made a touchdown. That was exciting.
He very nearly did.
Yeah, I was really going for it. Eli Manning, over 400 yards, 41 out of 53 or something crazy. Brilliant play.
Well, the 49ers defensive backfield is an absolute dumpster fire. Eric Reed's the only player playing up to standard. Antoine Bethea looks nothing like the player he looked last year. And our corners are a collection of men who have fallen out of a clown car at the front of the training facility.
Oh, man, you were so close to a wonderful alliteration. If only you changed men for another word that began with C.
I couldn't think of one. I couldn't possibly think of one.
But it was beautiful.
I can think of another name word beginning with C, and that's Coons. Travis Coons, who kicked a 32-yard field goal
right.
in overtime, and Josh McCown threw a team record 457 yards to lead the Cleveland Browns to a stunning 33-30 victory over the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday. And here is a place where I do have to eat some humble pie. 3 weeks ago, I said, why on earth are you not playing Johnny Manziel? He's the only person who gives your franchise a real chance. Josh McCown will lead you to like 6 wins. Great. Perfect. Manziel could be an X-factor player. Josh McCown has been absolutely lights out the last 2 weeks. He's thrown over 300 yards in the last 3 weeks, which is the first time any Browns quarterback has done that ever. And he threw 457 passing yards against the Ravens, who admittedly have been a bad team, but they shouldn't be this bad. This was a great win for the Browns. I'm really impressed with them overall.
Gary Barnage, old man Barnage. Do you see his touchdown?
How does he get, like, he's been one of those players who've been drifting around the league for a few years doing absolutely nothing and then has just been brilliant the last few weeks. I'm not saying, I mean, they're in the same division as Cleveland and the Steelers, who are starting to look like a half-decent team all of a sudden, and they'll have Big Ben back in 2 weeks' time. So I'm not saying the Browns are going to be going to the playoffs or anything, but I'm liking that the Browns team are bringing it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, terrible uniforms, but they're bringing it. They still can't run the ball. But if you've got McCown passing for 457 yards, Barnage and Benjamin and Hawkins catching the ball, just keep throwing it. Why not? Do what they said they weren't really going to do at the beginning of the season. It was all about that offensive line, about the rush, the legacy of Shanahan. Well, that hasn't worked out for them. Just throw the ball. Just throw it. Ravens, Justin Forsett, second straight game over 100 yards. Pleased for him and for having him in fantasy. Apart from that, they're missing Steve Smith Sr. leadership-wise on offense, definitely.
All great shouts. That's some fantastic analysis crammed into a small amount of time. Well done, Ollie.
How long has it been? About 45 minutes?
In a moment, we're going to talk about some London watch, because we're leaving those four teams till the end for good reason. But let's quickly talk about the Philadelphia Eagles. Finally have an offense. Their guards played really, really well. Sam Bradford, 2 red zone interceptions in the first half. Looked like he was going to throw this game away. Ended up throwing for 333 yards and 2 touchdowns. Fletcher Cox, unbelievable on the defensive side of the ball, forcing 2 fumbles on sacks of Drew Brees. Ryan Matthews and DeMarco Murray both ran for a touchdown and both looked good, although DeMarco Murray does look a yard off the pace he was last year. And the Eagles beat the Saints 39-17. Let's get excited about the Eagles again!
No, move on.
There should be a mention at this point of Sean Payton and these links linking him to the Miami Dolphins. I mean, he has said on these reports, I love it here, why would I leave, yada, yada, yada. But that situation is looking uglier and uglier for him as it stands. And, yeah, I'm seriously quite concerned for Saints fans that there's going to be a complete overhaul in the next offseason. Right, it's time for it. Let's do ourselves a little bit of a new feature that I've just decided to make up absolutely and totally on the spot, and so much so that I haven't got the music ready. This is... It's an advert on YouTube. God damn it! Turn it down!
I like the music, though.
This is London Watch.
Oh, I like the flags on YouTube. They've got all the different flags.
Uh,
That music was very promsy. I hate the proms.
Wow.
Do you like the proms?
Not really.
Just get off my TV screen when you're on it.
When you know you can change the channel with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but I want to have a moan about it. Fucking proms.
This is what happens when we do podcasts at 6 a.m. They fall apart very quickly. And with no guest as well. This has been a wonderful and glorious mess.
So soon after my incredible analysis of the whoever it was. I can't even remember.
Right, London Watch. Very quickly, let's rattle through these four teams. Jay Cutler led Chicago to a pair of fourth quarter touchdowns, including an alert toss to running back Matt Forte, having dropped the ball on a snap. That was your fault, Jay. To give the Bears an 18-17 victory over the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday. This game is devastating for two reasons. First of all, the Chiefs looked like they were going to be a great team to be bringing over next year. They now look like not a very exciting team. They're not throwing the ball down the field despite bringing Jeremy Maclin in. And then Jamaal Charles kills two of my fantasy teams and my buzz for this game, because I was so excited about seeing one of my favorite players play live, has a torn ACL, and it was a horrible injury. Nobody even touched him. You saw him go down. You knew it was bad immediately. Yeah. He's out for the season now. Ugh, devastating.
This game was bad for three reasons.
It also involved a Bears win?
Yes.
The Arizona Cardinals, Carson Palmer, again, just having the NFL gingers, killing it again, threw for three touchdowns and was benched because his team was so far ahead. Matthew Stafford was benched because he played so terribly. Three interceptions. The Arizona Cardinals routed the Detroit Lions 42-17 on Sunday. And by the end of the game, we were watching the backup bowl. That's right. It was Dan Orlovsky up against whoever the Cardinals' backup quarterback is. Drew Stanton. Drew Stanton up against Dan Orlovsky. Horrible. But yeah, the Lions are embarrassing. Matthew Stafford, and Matthew Stafford is a guy that I liked still a season ago, and people want to talk about him being terrible, but genuinely this regression has happened in the last 8 or 9 games. That they were good down the stretch last year, they fell apart late on, and they've just completely fallen apart this year. He's suddenly throwing terrible, terrible interceptions that he wasn't throwing before. He's always been a bit of a gunslinger, but yeah.
Well, the arm doesn't even look there anymore. That interception down the field to Calvin Johnson, who wasn't even expecting the ball yet. He was still running straight, and the ball was behind him. I can't remember. I think, was it Peterson that came back and picked it off?
Yeah, it was.
So,
but get excited, guys, because he's coming to London.
Yes. But the second quarter, four touchdowns for the Arizona Cardinals. Two Johnson runs, a Darren Fells catch, and a John Brown catch. I mean, that's where the game was won, and the Lions were completely blown out. They're a terrible football team. I did say that the NFC North could have a team that goes unbeaten and also winless. I didn't expect it to be the Lions. It could be the Lions this year.
A terrible, terrible game of football happened in Tennessee, in Nashville very specifically, over the weekend. It went in at halftime 0-3. Just one field goal separating the teams. But Tyrod Taylor threw for a touchdown pass, ran for another, and even caught a pass from Chris Hogan. As the Bills won out, he's a wide receiver of the Buffalo Bills.
Wow.
As the Bills got a 14-13 win over the Titans on Sunday. They're a team that I'm more excited about seeing than the other three teams that are coming over as it stands right now. Stephon Gilmore's a great player. He intercepted Marcus Mariota with 1:32 left to seal the win. Tyrod Taylor is an exciting player who's doing exciting things on the ground and even looks half decent through the air. Rallied from 10 points behind to win this one. I thought it was an impressive Bills second half performance, but overall a terrible game of football that I don't want to talk about anymore.
Me either. Move on to Jacksonville versus Tampa Bay. Streak is broken.
Which was a great game. Well, there's been so many streaks broken this week. I want to say I don't know which one you're talking about, but I know exactly which one you're talking about, because Lovie Smith, after 11 games, 11 home games in Tampa Bay, finally has a win.
Did you know if they'd lost this one, they were thinking of getting rid of the pirate ship?
No, I didn't know that, but I hope that that's not a falsity that you've just
I've
made
just
up.
Completely
Damn
made it.
It
up.
They should be thinking about getting rid of the pirate who's captaining this ship in Lovie Smith. He is not doing a good job. However, Doug Martin ran for 123 yards and scored 3 touchdowns on Sunday, helping Jameis Winston rebound from his terrible performance last week and lead the Buccaneers to a 38-31 victory over a mistake-prone Jaguars. And the Jaguars could have and should have won this game at several points. They had they had leads in the second half. They had leads in the fourth quarter. Their running defense has been really very good this year so far. Just fell apart. And too often, we're saying this about Jacksonville, that they look good going into games, they look good going into seasons, and they're not quite managing to do it. There is some positivity. Despite Blake Bortles suffering a joint sprain in his shoulder, which actually he carried into the game, and we don't know whether he's going to be playing next week as of yet, he has looked fantastic the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
The guy we saw early last year, Allen Robinson had 7 receptions for 72 yards and 2 touchdowns. Allen Hurns 5 for 116 and 1 touchdown. And the touchdown throws were beautiful throws, great catches. All in all, he looked great. Let's also give some love to his throw to TJ Yeldon for a touchdown, where he was forced to scramble out of the pocket, broke 2 tackles, scrambled back inside, and then found Yeldon after holding onto the ball for about 9 seconds. Despite pressure, he looked really, really good. The rest of the team let him down. Well, the defense let him down.
You know who he reminds me of? It's a little bit Big Ben.
Hey, we've been saying this. It's the comparison that came into the league, and I think he's finally actually living up to that comparison as of now.
You know, the breaking of tackles, the physique, the arm. He's Big Benny, is Blakey Bortles.
So 303 yards, 4 touchdowns. He still makes some silly plays when under pressure, like a young player. I think that they need to... The one thing that if they're going to keep Gus Bradley around next year, the two things that they need to focus on, I think they still need to bring a star quality player into the defensive backfield. And they need to spend a lot of money on their offensive line. Either money in free agency or go out and take high draft picks on offensive line players. And the Jags still have the pieces to be an interesting team. They lost this one. They shouldn't have lost this one. I'm hoping they win next weekend. I hope they can come into Wembley with their best record ever. They've got the Texans at home next week. That is a winnable game. I'm excited about the Jags a little bit.
Yeah, me too. but remember their first round draft pick this year is injured, so he'll be coming back. That's a whole new player. So if they pick up another offensive lineman in the next draft, hopefully, well, it depends, a high draft pick, but whatever, you know. But if they pick up another one, that's 2 first round draft picks that will come back and really shore up the offensive line. The Jags could be good next year.
We've had an interesting tweet in just as we're finishing the podcast. As we're coming to a close, Martin Opry has snuck in right at the death, asking, you mentioned Clay Matthews being overrated. Yes, I did, Martin.
He's not overrated.
But who else would you consider to be the most overrated players in the NFL?
Oh, wow, great question. Right off the cuff as well.
Obviously, Russell Wilson. I just put that in there to make Sherry angry. it depends on how you're rating overrated in terms of money, in terms of... there have been some guys who've been massively overpaid this year. I mean, Colin Kaepernick's not overrated by any analysts, but he's definitely being overpaid, as is Ryan Tannehill, as is Alex Smith. There's this glut of middle-rank quarterbacks. Jay Cutler is very much in that range. Well done, sir. Who have been hugely overpaid for what they're worth. Other guys that spring to mind, Brandon Carr, massively overpaid. Byron Maxwell has been hugely overpaid based on his performances for the Eagles so far this year. There's guys who I definitely put into that category as overrated. I can't think who else I put in there.
I mean, this would be good after maybe at the beginning of the season, but CJ Anderson.
Yeah, CJ Anderson is a good shout. I would have put Sam Shields in there 3 weeks ago, but I've been wrong.
Beep.
He'll be terrible next week and give up a load of yards and a load of touchdowns. I kind of feel like I've covered it off there.
No, I think you have.
All right, great. Fantastic. There we go. We answered your question. Anything else you'd like to add to this, Ollie, before I do a hatchet job on this and then go home to bed?
And it really will be a hatchet job. I quite like London Watch.
So we're going to do that from now on. We're going to introduce London Watch. And I might even play us out on the song I actually intended to have there, not that version of Rule Britannia. So thank you so much for listening. Keep checking out gridiron-magazine.com. Get your predictions in there. The league is getting very interesting at that top end. There's going to be a fantastic prize at the end of the season. Keep an eye out for the Packers UK account. They're out with sports travel tours in Green Bay at the moment. They're going to have a wonderful time out there. And check out sportstraveltours.com if you ever want to go on a similar trip. They're the best people to do it with because they will make your experience unique and exciting. At Gridiron on Twitter. Am I forgetting anything, Ollie?
No.
Are you wanting to add anything to the mix?
Is the music you're going to play us out on London Calling?
I was...
Because that would appease the elder of our group, Simon Clancy.
Okay, I was going to play some more Promsy music just to make Let's go out on the mighty Joe Strummer and the mighty Clash. This is London Calling. This has been The Gridiron Show. Thank you for listening. Love you, bye.
London Calling through the faraway towns. Now war is declared and battle come down. London Calling to the underworld. Come out of the cupboard, you boys and girls. London Calling, now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania has bitten the dust.